Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where everything we do, we say, we express aims to support you becoming the marriage-transforming hero of your relationship. This episode, it's a deep dive on an absolute essential topic. It's not the first time I'll have spoken to it, but recent inspirations have come from my tribe, the community within Heroic Husbands Men Circles, and there's been some one-on-one conversations I've had, and it's just this general background topic that's of deep relevance in pretty much every single marriage. I've seen it countless times, definitely in my own marriage, and I see it with so many guys. It's like all pervasive as a core topic in the octagon of marriage, is this dynamic tension that exists between a man living his purpose and finding where his purpose lies in relationship to his relationship, to his marriage. And this tension, I know in my work as a physiotherapist, my previous lifetime, within a lifetime, I was working as a physiotherapist specializing in chronic pain treatment and management, and I started noticing the psychosomatic roots, and it's not maybe the root as the root cause, but it definitely was a big driving factor. There was a frighteningly high statistical rate of in cases of women that were experiencing chronic pain, chronic fatigue and mixes of both, that their husbands worked away from home, were traveling a lot, had big commutes. So it was like, yeah, they were living at home, but they weren't really present at home. Gone early, super early in the morning, arriving back super late in the evening, and, you know, 5-6 days a week type thing. That was happening a lot of the time. So I now have the language to, when I look back and go, yeah, well, there was the feminine nervous system, soul, psyche, not feeling seen, heard, and definitely not feeling safe. You know, her king was, his presence, his physical presence was not there. And obviously, the emotional, psychological, spiritual presence wasn't there. Because a lot of times, you know, guys come back from that sort of way. It's like, you've ticked the box, you've been the provider. You've done your purpose and you have the liberation and freedom to do that, which, hey, it's a beautiful thing, it's an important thing. But the most important aspects of presence many times are not there, because you've dedicated so much to the external purpose. When you get back to the weekends, you've got to tick all the major boxes. You've got to tick your personal energy needs, your parenting needs, the mowing the lawn needs, the DIY around the house needs, your queen's needs of conversation, your, like, a little bit of lovemaking, you know, you fucking meet your family, meet her family, talk to the neighbors, you know, your kids' football, the fucking, you know, like the chess club, you name it, you're trying to jam pack that in the weekend. So there's this dynamic tension. I want to touch base with you. Have you noticed at times when there's a part of you going, I need to get to work now? And work is very often, you know, that point of purpose. And then there can be points of purpose of, you know, you're the instructor at the local jiu-jitsu gym, you do charity work, there's certain work in communities or outside of work that you do, which is all beautiful, it's all amazing, and absolutely essential. Yet the elephant in the room is that this dynamic tension, sometimes it's not so dynamic, as in it's just, it's background, it's there, it gets stagnant, and it doesn't get brought out into full awareness. I'm going to bring in a reading from David Aida's The Way of the Superior Man. If, for those of you that are not aware of it, this is like one of the classics, if not the classic. It's up there in the top two or three classic men's work pieces of literature. It's an amazing book. I absolutely, a ton. It has been my go-to reference you know, when in the years leading up to my marriage breakdown breakthrough experience, I was planting tons of seed of intentionality, of potentiality, from reading this book incessantly. And every time I was in the car, I wasn't listening to music, I was listening to this book on repeat, just listening to it, and other teachings from the Aida. So it's a badass book, yet the Aida's teachings, they're deeply provocative, and I love that. And I really lean into that aspect myself. It's like, if you're going to say it, like, you know, just go with it with radical directness. Yet, one thing I've witnessed over the years since joining men's work is, it's because it's such a classic book, most guys, so many guys in deep men's work have read the book. And a lot of these guys are in relationship, and some in marriage, some in intimate relationships outside of marriage. And I've just noticed this pattern observing, where in my experience, it's like very often it's a case of, you know, the devil can quote scriptures for his own purposes. Where I'm like, oh, interpretations, it's like, you know, guys would say, it's like, oh, you know, I just read in the Way of the Superior Man, I keep going back to that. It's like, I'm going to read the passage that points to it. It's like, purpose is my number one priority, and my woman just doesn't get that, and she gets in the way. And it's like they get righteous about it, that they start using these teachings to justify their, what I find is a hardline stance. And sometimes, I'm not going to deny that sometimes, hey, you got to get real and go, you know, if you want to be an Olympic champion and your queen just is not there, and it's early relationship, and there's a tension, it's like, there's a judgment call to be made at times. I'm not going to deny that there's a possibility early days. But if there's deep, committed marriage, we're talking about married men here, very often there's house together, life together, kids together. I mean, there's a lot together. And it doesn't mean that you don't have an option to say, hey, this just isn't working out. However, I've just seen so many times that guys get hard, judgmental, and there's a lot of judgment about their woman being ultimately an inconvenience. I'll read the passage to give you some inclination, and we'll go conversational after that. Segment number 7, they're little mini chapters. Beautiful book I was put out. It's like there's a small, you know, one-liner, little bit of a summary, and then there's a few pages. I'll read the one-liner, that summary paragraph, and a little bit of the first few pages of it. Number 7, your purpose must come before your relationship. Every man knows his highest purpose in life cannot be reduced to any particular relationship. If a man prioritizes his relationship over his highest purpose, he weakens himself, disserves the universe, and cheats his woman of an authentic man who can offer her full, undivided presence. That's the paragraph. Going into the first paragraph of the few pages, admit to yourself that if you had to choose one or the other, the perfect intimate relationship or achieving your highest purpose in life, you would choose to succeed at your purpose. Just this self-knowledge often relieves much pressure a man feels to prioritize his relationship, when in fact it is not his highest priority. Your mission is your priority. Unless you know your mission and have aligned your life to it, your core will feel empty. Your presence in the world will be weakened, as will your presence with your intimate partner. The next time you notice yourself giving in to your woman, postponing your mission and denying your true purpose in order to spend time with her, stop. Tell your woman that you love her, but you cannot deny your heart's purpose. Tell her you will spend 30 minutes or some specific time with her in absolute attention and total presence, but then you must return to carry on your mission. What my general observation with this book, and I would say it with many provocative deep spiritual teachings, the great risk for men as they read it, what I've observed is, you know, as men, we can get binary. It's like black and white. And there's a great power in that. It's like, you know, you read it, feels true, I'm going to fucking go with it. Yet what I found in this is when I've heard guys will sort of quote this part and go, hey, I just keep going back. You know, purpose is my number one priority. And it's like my relationship, my wife, my marriage, like it's getting in the way and she doesn't get it. And there's a frustration. They're trying to explain this. She doesn't get it. And it gets really messy. Yet, it's within the totality. And even if you haven't read the book, you know, please stay in the conversation. It's you don't have to have read it to get the juice of what's on offer in this episode. That's my expectation. What I've observed is guys get binary in black and white and they take one segment of an entire teaching. There's an entire book. It's like 40 or 50. I forget. Like I don't know how many segments in it. It doesn't really matter. 44, see near the end. It's nearly 50 segments. And great spiritual teachings, they will be almost paradoxically contradictory in ways. But this is the art. And deep intimate relating is an art of bringing from the totality of your awareness what will serve your highest love coming into your relationship and into the world. So where this teaching is true, and you can get black and white with it, it's like as it's displayed and spoken to, written quite explicitly, like women pleasing your woman, dropping your purpose to stop, you know, in fear of being rejected and, oh, you know, well, I won't go to the thing today and like I'll spend the whole afternoon with you. And I mean, that's going to increase resentment over time. She'll have broken you one time. Hey, there's fears, there's, you know, fear of abandonment, etc., etc. And if she can break your resolve to live your purpose one time, she'll do it again and again, because that's part of her feminine testing of you. It's like, hey, you don't seem so certain that this is absolutely what you want to do. So, you know, I'm going to get what I want. And if you bend and break your resolve to go, you know, get stuck into your getting fit routine because, you know, fucking your fitness is like a high purpose or a high expression of your purpose. You want to like be an Olympic champion, but you like talking about it, but she can break your resolve. She will test you on your resolve to enter in and commit to your purpose. That's the feminine testing. So what Daida says, like absolutely right. It's like, you know, you got to play that game and like not bend with the testing. And as he says, it's like, be willing to set a specific time and get impeccably present with her. Not resentfully present for 2 hours. Be impeccably present for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Like, be so complete where she feels seen, heard, and safe. And then it's like, baby, you know, like your Olympic dream. I might go with that just for the sake of this, but it's like your Olympic dream. It's like, baby, I got to get out there. You know, I got to get out. It's late evening. It's training, but I'm going. And you go for it, and you're going to come back feeling, you know, really invigorated from your felt sense of integrity within yourself, and your confidence within yourself will skyrocket as a result, and it will build progressively over time. You'll have a major foundation in your nervous system to be able to show up in your relationship, and your relationship can be fine with that. Now, with the Olympic dream, with work, whatever it is, you know, the purpose takes time, and time is time away from your woman, is time away from, we're talking obviously within here, it's family men, and a lot of you guys have kids, and there's a lot of stuff to be done. So any big decision like that involves a sacrifice within the ecosystem of the family life. And it might be a temporary sacrifice. I don't believe in sacrifices long term. I really don't believe in sacrifice. It's like it the sacrifice is upgrading the efficiency and the effectiveness of how the ecosystem works so you can live in purpose. I achieve an insane amount now when I was doing all this women pleasing stuff and not going with my purpose. So, and I was quite I was quite resentful. I was deeply resentful of my marriage, of my wife, of my married life, of all the responsibilities that family life were heaping on my shoulders, and I was blaming my queen. Which, to that point, reading this, it's pretty black and white. However, there's a major risk in this. If you read this and you go, well, Daida says, and this is the way, you know, as a superior man, I've got to put my purpose is number one in my life. And my deep intimate relationship, hey, that's the feminine. The feminine has the deep intimate relationship as number one. It's not my number one. There's a major risk in taking this thinking on black and white. And I would say I'm not going to do it here, but I can... and this is where I found that it's an art. In the same way, in the same moment of, you know, communicating with my queen, I will have been implementing consciously and it's more subconscious at this point. It's like really written into the tapestry and of my own teachings and distinctions that have come true. It's like I'm implementing 2, 3, 4, 10, 20 of the passages all in one go. And it's like, take one of them and pit it against the other, and they seem contradictory, but you're practicing the wisdom of both, or three of them, or four of them at the one time. And it's in that blend is the art of it, that you can both fully, deeply connect with your feminine, with the feminine core of your woman, and make sure she's seen, heard, and safe as you own your purpose. But the danger is, if you read this in alienation, which, you know, very often as men we do, it's like, oh, we read it, we feel it's black and white, and we love the black and whiteness of it. And the black and whiteness of it gets hard. But purpose is my number one. The elephant in the room of modern society, I've spoke to this, and this is where, from reading these teachings and seeing so many guys actually have their marriages disintegrate or like go into chronic conflict as a result of this tension between them living their purpose and the desires of their woman in relationship with them, is we've had a century and a half of incessant conditioning that purpose for a man is his external purpose outside the family home. Industrial Revolution, I've spoken to it often before, but it really deserves reminding, the depths of which we have accepted that it's like society is set up that the man's purpose is outside the family home. A little bit of an upsurge of, oh, working from home, but it's like the purpose, the core of that is outside the family home. For millennia, it was the family home and hunter-gatherer, but like we worked together, we hunted together, we prayed together, we danced together. There was a way more togetherness. It's a recent phenomenon. And in fact, you know, 100% of modern society, Western, it's even like, what's Western society at this point? It's like they're trying to globalize the whole thing in a homogenous, I would say, fucking bullshit mess, because on academic analysis, backing this up with Four Arrows interview and his book, where was it 28 tenets of modern society when compared with indigenous societies and cultures. Indigenous societies were all built on, they were connection oriented, on the 28 tenets, where the 28 tenets when compared with modern society, it's all disconnection based. So the purpose when it comes up in men is 99% of the time it's external. And if you read this teaching, the big risk is like, yeah, come on, it validates this feeling. It's like, my purpose is outside, it's my number one priority. And like, when you put it number one, it's like, well, there's a number two. And there's subtleties and nuances there. And ultimately, your queen, and this is where it's true, it's like, yeah, she doesn't want you to not own. She fucking, it repulses her that you speak about the Olympics, but you don't discipline yourself, and that it just takes her to go, oh, but you know, stay in, I've wanted to watch a movie, and you break it. She knows, Jesus, he's not trustworthy. He speaks this being his highest purpose, but it's bullshit. It just takes me to sort of go a bit mopey and try, you know, there's certain moves or things that I'll say, and he breaks. It's like, I like it, but I'm sitting with him, and there's some part of me going, I don't fucking trust him either. So it's this is the subtlety and the there's the nuanced part of it. However, if you end up just going and mix an incredibly high teaching like this, which involves a lot of nuances of, I feel, integrating the entirety of the teaching of the book and many other different parts of his teachings and other teachings in together in this beautiful, that's wisdom. Wisdom is not on one page. Wisdom is the entirety of, you know, of a teacher's wisdom integrated together. That's the art of it. But if you mix this with the underlying conditioning of modern society, which is like, okay, so they eat this high spiritual teacher, deep intimacy, you know, my purpose is my number one, that's it. If you mix that with external purpose is a man's only way to true meaning, which is the bullshit conditioning of modern society, you've got a potent mix of spiritual teachings with bullshit disconnection-oriented teachings that will end up having you disregard your queen. Now, I've wrangled with this. I will say I've wrestled with this. And a lot of Daida's teachings, I've come and I've my persona has rendered itself, you know, inadequate times and times again, where the truth of his teachings is not his teachings. He has found beautiful modern words to describe the relevance of ancient masculine, feminine, sacred spiritual teachings. I've broken my persona has been broken against it time and time again. However, I have found in my own teaching capacity in recent years a distinction that I find is crucial in this. I do feel if you read the book, Daida sort of ticks all the boxes, but I like inviting guys to get binary in their thinking about purpose. That there's primary purpose and secondary purpose. Primary purpose, which, you know, some of you might be atheists, and that's okay. I'll speak to the spiritual aspects of it first. All mystical traditions, they'll use their own unique, beautiful language to describe this, but it could be said that, you know, the golden thread purpose of them all is union with ultimate truth. You know, union with God, the Christian, union with Buddha nature, the Buddhist, union with Brahma, union with, you know, and there's all the different beautiful words to describe. My personal perspective is like it's all the same, just different words. I could be shot in certain places for saying that. Such, I personally think it's bullshit. How many fights have, you know, it's, oh, but the ultimate truth is in this book. It's in that book. It's like, really, human life force, you know, life energy. It's the same fuel fueling us all. You know, you can try and trademark the word, you know, spiritually wise. But, you know, I've never found that working out, you know, millions of lives lost in spiritual wars, and just never made sense to me. Don't, it never will. Anyway, there's unique, beautiful words to describe union with ultimate source energy, with whatever wording is in that in your tradition. Enlightenment. I use the word enlightenment versus entitlement in the teachings here, in the culture here at Be the Husband She Brags About. You know, and for the guy that is listening in, going, ah, I'm not so much into the spiritual religious stuff. I'm not really into religious stuff. I'm deeply deep into spiritual stuff. You know, it's like dying without regret. You know, it's like you don't believe in the afterlife. You don't believe in all, you know, all that stuff. Cool. You know, I do feel that dying without regret is some part of us. If we have the courage to reflect upon, we want to meet our end of life with, man, I came, I saw, I conquered. It's like my music. I've played all my music. You know, I lived a, you know, hopefully a long, full, healthy life. And, you know, the people that are surrounding my kids, close family, you know, I can look back and be at peace, you know, inner peace at what I gifted the next seven generations coming after me, you know, my legacy, legacy for men is an important thing. But I'm at inner peace. There's a peace, an inarguable felt embodied peace, not a mentally conceptualized peace, but a felt peace. You're sitting there, you're like, I'm good. I'm ready to leave this time-space reality on good terms. I call that primary purpose. Inner peace, felt peace now, not postponing it to some point where, oh, you know, hopefully I'll cross my fingers, literally pray to God, I'll get into heaven then. It's like there's a heaven now. You know, there's this peace and happiness that follows me through my life. So from that state of consciousness now, you know, you will enter the death experience. You won't put all your chips on the table and work your fucking ass off and be mentally scurrying around, busy, and hope that at the final stage, you'll just find some state of consciousness. I don't think that's going to happen, actually. It's better to prepare now, I believe. That's primary purpose. That, my friends, is like, really, if you want to become the man she brags about, this is the point of this entire movement here, accessing that state of being is really it's the trump card. That's the number one priority. Again, Daida talks to this, like aligning yourself with your highest purpose on other parts of the book. It's like your spiritual truth, your reality, meditating, like turning to source, doing whatever practices is necessary within your tradition or by your personal choices that drops you into deep inspiration to be so present that all the external change, which is the feminine, the comings and going, the total impermanent dance of reality, you don't get caught up in any of it. It's like, you know, nothing, what's it, Shakespeare, there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. You're just like, yeah, whatever, the good, the bad, it's like whatever, it's like this too will pass. It's just like it comes, it goes. I'm at peace, bubbling away, sort of chuckling on the inside, laughing at the sort of the insanity of it all. It's like, you know, my early days, I used to get caught up taking things personal in relationship with my queen. I used to take things personal at work. I used to get over exaggerated happiness and sense of excitement when, you know, things went well, but then I'd go into a hole of depression and anxiety and a sense of rejection when things went bad. It's like, you know, with time, you just come to go, hey, you know, that primary purpose, that inner peace and happiness is bubbling away in the background. It's an inside out job. You're there. From there, you can love your relationship. However, that's primary purpose. I would find it's not often spoken of, or it's not spoken about often enough for sure, in, you know, tables where men are there. I'd even say in men's work, it's like talking about the issues and the challenges, but it's like, man, where's the primary purpose? Where's your spiritual practice? Where's your ultimate truth? What are you doing to experience that, to invite that experience into your nervous system today? Not some conceptualized, oh, I'll get there, you know, retirement mode. Again, it's this thinking, oh, I'll get to that, but I'm fucking too busy to think about that now. And then the child dies, then you get cancer, then your queen gets cancer, then fucking, like, shit happens. And you're like, fuck, I've been here bursting my ass, so busy, and complaining about marriage, complaining about shit, talking about the Olympics, and now. Primary purpose. Deep inner peace, happiness. Absolutely essential. Secondary purpose is all the other stuff that happens outside of you. And I like alliteration, but it's like your mission to lead, your mark to make, your message to share with the world. Mission, mark, or message. And I believe every man has a mission to lead, a mark to make in the world, a message to share. Some combination of them all. Be the husband she brags about, heroic husbands, men's circles. Man, that's my mission. My mark to make is like, you know, that mark in guys' inner world experience that they take on the baton of like that identity, heroic husbands, and the next seven generations are better as a result. And that message, hey, it's the podcast. So I definitely resonate with your purpose must come before your relationship to a point. However, like I do feel my relationship is much more grounded since I've, you know, so-called found my purpose, or more importantly, I have aligned my life around showing up in the world on purpose. Now, One thing I noted is I've had lots of different men, you know, in the space of coaching and in the space of teaching, in the space of, you know, books and that. And I noted this scary pattern where these world-class teachers, I'm talking like household names in the personal growth area. I don't want to mention them because I don't have the commentary to know why their marriages failed, but I like, these are guys that in their books, in their seminars, in their teachings that people, you know, pay thousands to go, and hey, it's fucking cool. Actually amazing the work and the transformation that they support people to bring en masse. So it's like, it's not that the mission is wrong, but their marriages fall apart. And I've noticed with some, it's like, oh, okay, so, you know, you're doing this work and you get married and you have kids with that woman and then the marriage falls apart. So I won't comment on the name because I don't know. Like, obviously, it's more complex than my oversimplified analysis. But it's the pattern. It's how many of them I've heard when I read behind the scenes and go, oh, he's divorced too. And there's times when I've been listening to, you know, I was gaining a lot of inspiration from their teachings, how they were coaching others, their insights on relationship. But I'm like, fuck. So many of their marriages are falling apart. That guy, and I'm not going to mention, but it's like, yeah, his fucking two marriages fell apart. And he was teaching all of this shit the whole way along. That guy. I'm like, what? There's some major part of me was waking up and going, there's something fucked up in all of this. Because these powerful men, badasses, like, I still gain inspiration from some of them, still will listen at certain times, certain moments, like, you know, drop my motivation, focus, energy, whatever. It's like, you know, it's the pick up call, get my fucking shit back, and I listen to their teachings. I don't really listen to their teachings on marriage, I'll have to say. I don't. And again, I'm clearly making assumptions. I don't have the access to have a one-on-one call with them. I'd imagine that a lot of them will give a very eloquent, well-thought-out, beautiful, sounds really fucking inarguable answer as to why. But I find it's a lot down to, hey, the secondary, the purpose was more important than the relationship. And I found it's like, hey, they get their second wives and maybe the third wives. It's like the fine ones. I've seen some that the wives travel with them now. You know, the clever old fox, the woman, she's like, fucking, I've seen what happened the first time. I'm going to travel with him. I'm going to align my life around his purpose. And hey, maybe that's cool. Maybe that's just right. But I definitely looked and went, what the fuck is happening here? Really, what the fuck is happening here? That these powerful guys with all these teachings bubbling through them, teaching the world how to love, and their marriages are falling apart. I look for results-based spiritual practitioners. I speak that within Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. It's like, guys, do you feel the massive difference within 3 months? Within 3 weeks of your practice? It's like, I practice results-based spiritual practice, results-based teachings, results-based, you know, what you're implementing. Is it fucking working or is it not? Are you feeling a radical difference in your inner world? And that spreads out into your marriage. And like, by and large, it's like, yes, absolutely, inarguably. Like, the guys are deeply more and more committed to it. I'm like, cool. But their marriage is improving as well. And a lot of those guys actually recognize, you know, it's early, it's still early days, but I can hear it coming through a lot of guys that purpose is coming to the forefront. Now, the challenge is, how do you bring the secondary purpose, which there's all that harsh bullshit conditioning that it has to be outside the family home. Maybe there's a long-term thing there. And there is, you know, like the king goes off to battle. You know, it's like there are things that the hunters went off. There was a risk. They did it anyway. They aligned with their higher secondary purpose, using my language. My obsession has been, how do you link that in a way that it fuels marriage, that it invigorates marriage, that your queen and you and your heart and both nervous systems, individually and collectively, can feel invigorated, can feel infinitely more powerful as a result, and not risk the black and white, masculine, male, rational-minded thinking that actually alienates your queen and risks her feeling like you're in the background, feeling she's a fucking inconvenience and your family is an inconvenience, and that they're second rate. That it's clear. Number one priority is this, it always will be. And yeah, I tend to you because, fuck it, well, your number one priority is this. But ultimately, I'd, it shows over time that you prefer going out the door. How do you soften that and accommodate for the deepest truths, the deepest needs, the deepest desires of everybody in your household? That's kingship. The way I have went at it, and this is bringing in a reminder of stuff, feel into it. I want to touch base, actually. Just, I wish I had you guys in front of me. I'm asking again, as always, like it's conversational, but I want to touch base with you. You know, touch base within yourself. And start even verbally. Sometimes if you're in a car, if you're in an environment where you can audibly go, yes, it makes sense, or take this moment, yes, it makes sense, or speak out, no, like, well, actually, Mark, you know, I have this question or that query, and it, you know, it's like, or, you know, what does, do you have those tensions? Have you had moments or plenty of moments when there's this tension between you, your work, your whatever that secondary purpose is, and your queen and her wishes, her desires, and her feeling upset that you're dedicated, you're overly committed to that, you're not committed enough to the family, but you go out to jiu-jitsu training, it's all about the black belt, you're not at home with us, like, you know, have you had that tension projected at you? A lot of guys that I've asked this one-on-one where I have immediate feedback have said, yeah, fuck yeah, it's a very real thing, this tension of committing to both things. But the queen is giving feedback that you're overly committed to that, and how do you navigate this? Just get real within yourself. Just lean in. I want you to practice heroic humility, the ground of truth of where you're truly at. It'll be much more meaningful, this conversation, if you lean in and bring it conversation style. What I have experienced, guys, is, and my queen's feedback on this has been, yeah, this has been a revelatory thing for her. In conversation, I've brought these teachings to her down the years, and she was always triggered by this number one thing. She's like, I can intellectually get it, but it's like, screw it. You know, it's like, and the ways I was talking to it, thinking about it and going at it, she was like, yeah, just it feels completely off. What has supported me is the realization that the primary purpose is my ultimate purpose. And I would say, in deeper analysis, you don't have to take this on, but it's something you've absolutely got to look at, is dying without regret, radical inner peace, setting your life up that your primary purpose, union with ultimate truth, whatever that means for you, it's super important, beyond everything on the outside, which is your secondary purpose. Now, your mission to lead, your mark to make, your message to share in the world, deeply important, inarguably important. A lot of guys I've read, you know, and I've heard guys saying this, that on retirement, you know, there was, I forget which book it was, but like two top-end CEOs that were badasses, like they had maxed it to the last, incredible leaders, their legacy, maybe not forevermore, but it's like for generations to come. They'd written books. They've inspired hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions, some of them. And were asked at the retirement party, you know, if they could go back, what would they do different? And in both examples, it's like the guy's teared up. And it's like, I'd have committed and invested more time with family. It's like, wow. You know, the secondary purpose, they nailed. They nailed the mission, and they probably felt really fucking shit hot and still deeply proud of that. But there was a massive miss, and looking back, they were like, they spent way too much time committed to that. They would have showed up to, you know, the football practice way more, because they realize now, it's like, you know, I'm not connected with my son. My son saw the shadow of me more often than he saw me and felt me. My daughter, my wife, my queen, if she's still around, you know, that question, if she's still around. Because again, that sort of belief of, yeah, but my purpose is number one, so often that is communicated so hard and not with the full wisdom of Daida's fullest teachings, and these fullest teachings of sacred masculine feminine teachings going back with the fullness of the wisdom, it gets so angular, hard and opinionated and a righteous sort of perspective that it alienates your queen. I have found that the medicine, the elixir for all of this is realizing and accepting, coming to accept, surrendering to the idea, and not every man will, but definitely within this culture, this is what I practice and this is what I would speak to, is that intimate relating is the number one path to achieving your primary purpose. It's the elephant in the room of every man's existence. Like, men will go, it's like, oh, but I'm going on men's retreat because that's where, and it's like, yeah, fucking men's retreat, absolutely, absolutely, it's necessary. Men heal with men. Oh, I'm going to the Buddhist retreat, you know, like, will you come with me? No, well, I'm going because in 10 days I need to sit in my ass and like Vipassana, whatever the fuck it is, silence retreat, because ultimate purpose. I do all of these things. I need to read. I'm part of the Bible study group and it's like really important and I go to it. Cool, brilliant, absolutely sacred. But there's a disconnect, and the vast majority of spiritual practitioners, the vast majority, are not using the sacred experience of doing the masculine-feminine dance with their queen as the number one path of realizing and connecting and practicing your spiritual truths, your spiritual beliefs, what's in the books, what your teachers are saying, to implement everything you have experientially learned and harnessed from your meditation practice and spiritual study, your yoga, whatever the fuck tradition it is, your Bible study, and seeing how fucking good you're actually able to embody it in the heat of the fire. I'm like, it's way too easy to read shit and to do meditation and to do all of this stuff, which, hey, I honor, I bow, I say, fuck yeah, well done and doing all of that. But your intimate relationship with your queen, I find the greatest medicine is practicing seeing that as the number one arena where you get to see where the fuck you are now. Beyond conceptualization, beyond it's, and like guys go, it's like, oh, she even gets in the way of me doing meditation. She gets in the way, she's inconvenient. She doesn't, I've held space, guys, I've been in space with guys that have sat their ass in a meditation cushion thousands of hours more than me. They've been to Daida retreats. I've heard guys in men's work. Honor them. I'm not saying it's like they're bad, but I'm like, these guys have been to more Daida retreats. I've never sat in the live space with Daida. Ever. I've, like, in the beginning, I actually felt fucking, like, intimidated. I've been reaching out for years. I was like, notice a guy, he's doing coaching, doing men's work. He's like, hey, man, do you want to jump in the connection call? And I remember feeling for years, like, oh, intimidated. It's like, oh, yeah, man, you know, it's like, sort of like you get the Instagram version and, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I've been doing this work and been attending the Daida retreats, this retreat, that retreat, you know, been doing it for years, doing breath work. It's like, oh, fuck, you know, I remember feeling, it's like, I'm just this fucking random schmuck with, you know, I don't have the money and caught here in Ireland and I'm doing my thing and I'm just, yeah, I'm incessantly listening. I've listened to hundreds of hours of the teachings again and again, read the book again and again, but like, Jesus, I've never done the practice. I've never been guided by the man himself or his top teachers and fuck, here's this dude. And but then at some point I was like, I woke the fuck up and I'm like, so many guys that have done infinitely more teachings than me, have done more retreats with Daida or, you know, certain of his lead teachers around the world, way more, invested way more money, time, etc., etc. They don't know how to fucking stay in a relationship. And there's tidy language as to why the last 2 years in a relationship and then they abscond. And they're probably waxed lyrical and are more poetic to fucking listen to. With the masculine, the feminine, and, you know, they know the talk and the lingo. Well, I'm like, I'm 15 years in and I'm still fucking here with a profoundly wounded past myself and a profoundly wounded woman, like in her past, profound wounds. So it's like tested against the worst of the worst vitriolic fucking shadow being fucked my way by unapologetic feminine style and saying, well, where the fuck are you? And I've stood the test of that. So there's been this part of my self-esteem has actually skyrocketed in recent years going, I'm actually practicing this. And what I'd say, guys, is my power in this and my queen feels safe to a level that she never imagined possible before. Yes, I have my secondary purpose. Yes, you know, I have brought really awkward feeling ideas and continually do in my obsessive drive to live out my secondary purpose. It's sacred. Be the husband she brags about. Up at 5 in the morning. My queen, it's been a number of years, you know, speaking to it. It's like she's a night owl, self-declared. I'm a morning person. But it was like, baby, the night owl stuff, getting up early in the morning. I mean, getting up early, it just was making sense in the ecosystem of our family. It took a number of years. She loves it now. We get up at 5. Like, really, we have our moments. I've had a moment recently where getting up at 5, I just went super, super tired. But I've snapped my ass back into gear, like, predominantly 5 o'clock. Get yoga done. Align my entire life behind my secondary purpose. Because I know when I hit my secondary purpose, what the man that shows up in marriage and relationship, I just feel much better. I feel much more content. However, the foundation for the secondary purpose is meeting my primary purpose. And I align my entire belief system that pretty much the number one arena for me to, maybe not to practice, like I read, I do meditation, I do stuff that my queen is not there. But my number one arena for testing where the fuck I truly am in my spiritual relationship with the divine, with ultimate truth, is with my queen. Because there's no other human being on the planet that is more qualified to, within a nanosecond, know exactly what state of consciousness I'm embodying in that moment or not. There's no other human more qualified. Within a nanosecond, my tone of voice, what I've just done, that nanosecond flicker with my eyes, the crease on my face, my posture, and a tiny shift of posture, my emotional state, my breathing, how I'm holding myself, where I am in the space with her, what's my posture like? Like, within a nanosecond, she can call me out on my bullshit. Now, this counterbalances, I have found a first-hand experience. I'm seeing it and feeling it in the guys in Heroic Husbands men's circles that are beginning to get this integrated within their day-to-day. Their queens are feeling the safety. They're feeling the integrity within the man. There's not this conflict of, there's your secondary purpose, like, fuck you, and then there's me, and I sort of am this second-rate thing that you come to. They're beginning to practice with ferocious spiritual courage, bringing their intimate relationships is where it's equally as important. It's the foundation. It's a synergistic relationship where your intimate relationship it's testing the fullness of your capacity to remain in presence practice. In the face of, like, the untamable, unboxable, irrepressible, fucking, like, you just cannot control that shit. And if you try, she's going to fucking hate you and you're going to hate your relationship. But when you practice, like, and I spoke to this, there's many different things I could speak on it. Like, what that looks like, that's in every single episode, is like, you will bow and honor her feedback on your state of presence in any given moment. You regularly request her to call you out on your bullshit. 99.999% of men don't do that because it would be too fucking uncomfortable. It's easier to go to the 10-day retreat, shut the fuck up, say nothing, or sit in the crowd and go, oh, you know, there is my I devotionally love the guru up there in front of me, because that dude doesn't fucking call you out directly and go, hey, I want to call you out on your fucking bullshit there, man. See your posture. Maybe he does, but it's a once-off. And you actually feel you get a mentally, you mentally ejaculate inside going, oh, it's the guru, the guru. You're like, I was relating with a Buddhist master like that myself. I've spoken to that with you before. Or the black belt. You know, we bow. Say, oh, the black belt gave me, oh, it's like this cool feedback. It was wrecking my queen's fucking head. She's like, you relate with all these guys. It's like, I fucking told you that 100 times, 1,000 times. You never fucking listened. Because I wasn't lined up with whore being like the number one path in my life of whore feedback. What a divine gift. And since I have, and I fuck up on that very often, there's certain things recently I wasn't fully receiving her feedback on, you know, things that would support me in health. And yet, you know, I paid an osteopath and he said one thing and I fucking is like, yeah, I'm going to practice that completely. And she was like, she felt hurt. She's like, the fuck is that about? And it was another part of me outsourcing this wisdom. Yeah, it's not wrong to go to the guru, to go to your master, to go to a spiritual retreat. It's not wrong to take feedback from the outside world. But are you simultaneously denying the absolute power of the gift that your queen is to you in achieving your primary purpose? Touch base with yourself. How often in your marriage has a part of your mind rebelled again, resisted, resented your queen for what your mind perceives and labels as her criticizing? Oh, there she goes again. Oh, she's complaining. Why is she always out to get me? Why does she not just, like, how often? 1,000 guys, 10,000 guys in the room, a lot of fucking hands are going up. And the guys that their hands don't go up, you're fucking self-delusional. And it's like, you can drop and fuck off from this podcast now if you think I'm arrogant saying that. Because you wouldn't be listening if you didn't resist, if you were not resisting and resenting her for her complaining, for her shit, you would have an impeccable marriage at this point. It's omnipresent. And hence, when, and bringing the golden thread in here, hence, when a guy with a way of relating with his queen in a way that it's like, oh, there she goes again, oh, she complains. When you relate like that and the entirety of your nervous system transmits a message to her that evokes a response of, he just fucking sees me as this inconvenience. I've spoken, not to go into the depths of it, but it's like, fuck. He feels entitled that I should give him the good shit like his mom did, but I'm not his fucking mom. She deep down knows there's this ancestral power that comes through her intuitively that is like, challenge his ass. Challenge him out of his mediocrity. Do whatever is necessary, consciously and subconsciously, to crank up the pressure. And it's untidy, one might say. They have their 100%. It might, you know, by some terms, it's like, well, that's unskillful because it renders, it brings up these emotions. I'm saying, it ain't fucking unskillful. It's feminine. She's cranking it up. She denies you sex. She denies you praise. She denies you fucking the nice smile. She starts denying you. She starts closing yourself off because she's like, you gotta fucking earn this shit. But if you don't have to take this on board. You can actually, you have, man, I speak very passionately, but I also, it's also true at the exact same time, you don't have to take any perspective on. I'm just saying it takes spiritual, much, much bigger spiritual balls to unwrap the gift of your queen's feedback. That whore feedback, she is the most qualified person on the planet to give you feedback of where your consciousness, your state of consciousness is at. And I'm saying that takes massive balls. It doesn't take such balls to book a retreat 10 days, to pay whatever money in the travel and feel all important that you're going, you're doing, you're lining up your purpose. She's there 24/7 waiting for you, waiting for you to snap the fuck out of mediocrity and step into the game of embodying godliness, embodying presence. This is the ancient teachings. This is pre-bullshit society, patriarchy, dominate women, put them down, make them secondary. You know, if you want to hang in and around the temple, just shut the fuck up and do the errands in and around. We're the King Kongs here. It's bullshit. There's been a massive alienation. I've spoke to it recently. My girls were shocked going into church, and no commentary in church and all the rest. Like, don't, if you want to take it personal, man, drop off, because I'm going to be speaking anyway. They were fucking shocked, and they should be shocked to their core. Their question was the pristine spiritual beauty of their open-hearted, absolute calling on fucking bullshit was, Daddy, why is it all men? There's only one woman, and there's all of these massive, beautiful statues, but they're all men. What's going on? They were noticing the inherent mismatch. It's like, why is it all men? It's actually disgusting. And that's, you know, coming into landing on this, that's the danger. You know, the secondary purpose is the most important thing. The danger is, the elephant in the room, the risk is that your queen will feel alienated and she won't feel important. And I'm inviting you, I'm challenging you to really consider this, how you relate with your queen. Because if deep down, whatever your perspective is, there's going to be some part, the masculine practice is to embody, you know, limitless freedom of expression, to experience limitless freedom beyond all constraint. All masculine behaviors point to this, from our desire of sport to sex to it's the desire of freedom. It's like, to earn enough money so I can be free of the concern of money. There's this desire for freedom. The ultimate is living and dying. It is dying with total, there's no obstacles to me dying in absolute peace. To do that, to sincerely do that, and not get caught in the rat race of living out your marriage, your life, in our inner rat race of fucking scurrying mental activity, when you judge and blame life, hiding from shaming yourself. If you want to claim your full kingship, I challenge you to look at how you relate with your queen. And if in your past, and hey man, my nervous system still prints out, you know, thoughts, protective pathways, they're still there. Not fucking enlightenment, but I'm playing that game all in. Still comes up with resistance to her complaints. Resistance to, well, not to, that labels it as complaints. It's feedback. But my practice is to open my heart up, and my practice is to witness her and speak and honor her every single time. Every single time she gives me feedback, I honor her and say, hey baby, I love that. It takes great courage for you to give me that feedback. I take that on board. I'll be a better man as a result of that. I'll be a better father. I love that. You're the most important person in my life. You're the most qualified person in my life to give me that feedback and to give me that support. So you having the courage means so much to me. Please, you know, I praise you uncensoredly for doing that. And she sort of smiles. She's like, you don't have to say that. But she's loving it at the same time. I'm like, I give you absolute permission. Please do that. Do it more often. Do it more intensely at times. But the more intensely I call, the more open-hearted and soft it is. Which is beautiful too, because hey, life is super intense. But because she feels so much permission, and I call it from her so regularly, because I relate with her being the most important person on the planet, the most qualified person to call me on my bullshit, to keep me in tow. That has been the role of the queen with the king. If you look at all movies, the king has the secondary purpose. He's mining the kingdom. He's mining all the people. He has the foe and the enemy that he needs to battle. You will find the queen on the throne is the one that, in the scenes in movies, it's with one comment they'll call bullshit on somebody that's visiting the castle. They'll call bullshit, because why? The queen has from archetypal energy has always been the queen, which is your beautiful wife. If you don't see her as a queen, it's because you don't yet identify as a king. If you see her in a small-minded way, it's because you see you in a small-minded way. This is why I start every single episode, "Hey, kingly brothers, heroic husbands," because when you start seeing yourself as a hero, you're going to see the heroics in your queen. When you start seeing yourself as a king, you're going to start identifying your wife as a queen. And when you see her as a queen, you're going to receive queenly gifts. But queenly gifts cut through your bullshit. And the king and the queen, as depicted in stories down the centuries, down the millennia, in all traditions, the queen calls bullshit with one comment. With one comment, she'll cut through the folly of the mental masturbation of the king, and will be, and he'll take it on board and he'll be like, "Yeah, okay, cool, brilliant. I feel that. Beautiful gift. Beautiful combination. Age old. That we have lost." So the queen keeps the king grounded, humble, that his sacred secondary purpose, he doesn't get lost in it, and it doesn't become his number one. Instead, it's this synergistic dance where the secondary purpose, call it like the secondary purpose is building the skyscraper out of the ground, but the primary purpose, which your queen is the number one most qualified person to support you in training you, in sharpening your sword every single day, no pressure, no diamond style, of giving you ferocious queenly feedback and to the feedback in a moment, where you can't fucking hide if and only if you have the spiritual balls to open yourself up to such a way of relating with her, but life becomes infinitely easier. That becomes a synergistic dance. The secondary purpose is the skyscraper built to the skies, to the heavens. And so you should go for that and align your whole life behind it. But the synergistic dance is her queenly feedback supports your primary purpose, which is the foundation on which you will build your secondary purpose. The secondary purpose is the skyscraper that reaches to the heavens. It's on public display for all to see. But underneath it, you will only rise as high in your secondary purpose relative in proportion to the depths of your alignment with primary purpose, which if you align yourself and get your full uncensored support from your queen and you see her as being a core central part, number one in the world of being most qualified to support you on your road to embodying your primary purpose, union with ultimate truth, practicing your state of consciousness, direct feedback in a nanosecond, where you're at, where you're not at. Now you're in this magical zone where, yes, your secondary purpose, never ever sacrifice that. Yes, that is true in this passage. But I feel there's sharpening up your perspective and realizing that your number one purpose, she's the number one person in the world. I know when I speak with my queen like this, she's my number one fan of everything I do external in the world. And it's not just this podcast, there's other missions. She's like, "You fucking go, man. I will support you through anything," because she is being viewed as the number one in the most sacred part of my number one ally, my supporter, the essential partner in my realization of my primary purpose. And primary purpose supersedes secondary purpose every single time. It's the ultimate. It's the two together. It's only when the two together. Otherwise, secondary purpose only, without primary purpose being backed up in a marriage, you will go to your grave with regrets. Too many guys have won the Oscars, have done the CEO, have earned the billions, and their marriage, and or ultimately their relationship with themselves, was not tended to. Don't be one of those men. Lots of love for you guys. Full honoring for you listening in. This is a provocative conversation. It's a paradigm melting conversation. It challenge. It's deeply fucking challenging. I have arrived here after years of breaking myself against teachings, questioning to the depths of it, every single day incessantly going there. I'm not saying it's an absolute truth, but from what I've witnessed, the other paradigm doesn't fucking work out so tightly. And what I'm observing is the men that take this on board, funnily enough, their queen's heart, soul, nervous system is entirely on board. Entirely on board. And those guys, by God, they have set a foundation underneath themselves, spiritually, their queens, their marriage, their kids, their kingdom, that when they go back out into the arena and build whatever their unique spiritual version of their secondary purpose skyscraper, that's going to be world fucking class and world changing. Putting yourself on the road to living and dying without regret. In perfect alignment with the mantra of this movement. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.